and yet you have done nothing to get us closer to my mate. Back off, pup, Lucian said coolly as he stepped in front of his mate. I know you are angry, but Perizzada isn't the enemy, and as powerful as she isn't all-knowing. I know you're frustrated, Beta, Dylan started, but stopped in mid-sentence as a bright light illuminated the alley. Dalton and the other two males growled, but then they were frozen, unable to move. Perry glared at the high fae that stood 30 feet away, just inside the mouth of the alley. Look at the cockroach that decided to crawl out from the rubble that has become his kingdom. She wanted to check on her wolves and make sure they were okay, considering the nature of the spell that Vulcan had cast over them, but she didn't dare take her eyes off of the fae in front of her.
Don't be petty, Perizzada. It isn't an attractive quality, and you have so much you have to overcome already. No need to damage the package even more.
Vulcan's voice made her skin crawl, and the snide comment and smart-ass look on his face made Perry want to slap him into the next realm. She rolled her eyes at him. If you're attempting to put a dent in my ego, you might as well give up. I have a level of confidence in myself that simply can't be shaken, especially not by crazy whack jobs like you. Now, enough with the pleasantries. Why are you here? She really wanted to ask how he knew where to find them, but that would make her look uninformed, and to someone like Vulcan, who saw knowledge as power, she would come across as weak.
I have something that once belonged to one of yours, he motioned to Dalton. I was curious to know if he still wanted her. Her time with me is just about up, and I will be releasing her soon. I wanted to know, should I give her back to her mother, or does he still want the responsibility of claiming her?
Screw looking dumb, Perry thought. Is she still alive? Vulcan's head tilted and his brow drew tightly together.
Why would you think she is dead?
How else would a bond be so thoroughly broken? Okay, so now she really did look like an idiot, but it couldn't be helped, and she wouldn't let her pride get in the way of learning about Jewel's well-being. He let out a cackling laugh that was horror movie worthy.
Oh, my, my, my. This is too much. The great Perizzada doesn't know it all. I have to say, I think that you've made my day.
Fantastic. Glad I could be the potpourri in your shitstorm. Answer the question. It was taking everything in her not to fry the psycho, but if she did that, then they might never find Jewel. Vulcan took a casual step toward her. He looked much too smug for Perry's liking, but then he had every right to be, because he held her by the balls and he knew it.
Little Jewel is alive for the moment. How long she remains that way is yet to be seen. In 2 days, I will leave what is left of her in a human city in her country. You can find her, if you're as clever as you think you are. Rotten to the core, framed by the sea, filled with different flavors, where many seek to be free.
And then he was gone just as quickly as he'd appeared. The snarls of the males as they were released were background noise, as Perry repeated the riddle to herself. She hated riddles. What the hell is it with villains and riddles? Is there a Villains for Dummies book out there that tells them all they need to throw in a good riddle every now and then in order to be official villains? She continued to mutter under her breath until she felt Lucian's hand on her face.
What did he say, love?
The calm, controlled voice did not fool Perry for a moment. Her mate was raging on the inside. Perry turned and looked at Dalton. She's alive, at least for now. Dalton growled, and Perry held up a hand to stop him. He's going to release her in 2 days.
Where?
The mountain-sized wolf barely sounded human as his cold eyes met hers. In a city in this country, she told him, and then paused, waiting for the inevitable.
What city?
Dylan asked. Rotten to the core, framed by the sea, filled with different flavors where many seek to be free. Perry nearly laughed at their confused faces. It's a riddle for the city he plans to leave her in.
Do you know the answer?
Dalton asked.
No, but I have 4 American girls who can probably figure it out pretty quickly.
Perry held out her arms for the 3 men to touch and flashed them from the alley. They reappeared in the living room of Perry's home, where 7 other males sat looking about as happy as a cat on a cactus.
"Please tell us you have something for us to do,"
Nick said dryly from his perch on the stairs. Perry glanced at Lucian.
"I need to go back to the pixie realm and check on Anna and the fool wolf chasing her, and then I need to check in with Elle and see how the search for the djinn is going."
Lucian's brow rose.
"You sent them in search of the djinn. Was that wise?"
Perry shrugged. "He's the only one who will know anything about what has happened between Dalton and Jewel. Will you stay here and make sure they don't kill Dalton?"
"Why would they kill Dalton?"
"Because he's going to lose it when he realizes he won't be joining us when we go find Jewel in whatever city it is we are looking for." Lucian let out a sigh.
"Go,"
he told her quietly, and she flashed before the others could realize what was happening. She only hoped that when she returned, her house would still be standing. Sally stared at the crumbling structure to which Elle had flashed them, and then looked at the Fae.
"You want us to go in there?"
She pointed at the ancient-looking house. After Perry had explained the situation with Dalton and Jewel, and told them they needed to find Thadric the Djinn, Elle and Adam had put together a list of possible places that they might find the recluse. And then they'd decided who would be going and who would be staying in the pixie realm. So, there she, Kostin, Elle, and Soren stood, hesitating, outside the first destination on the list. Sally couldn't see how any being, supernatural or not, could live in such a dilapidated building.
"Scared?" Elle teased. Sally nodded. "I don't have any desire to die today, including being crushed by falling beams. I hear it's a nasty way to go."
She let her eyes roam over the large form of the destitute manor. It was big, a mansion, and at one time was probably very handsome. The roof was tall, boasting several severely pitched steeples, making it appear as though someone had built several houses and stuck them as closely together as possible. There were 6 chimneys standing proudly from each of those steeples. The tall windows were probably magnificent when light danced behind them, but dark as they were now, they simply looked like large, sad, drooping eyes.
"Why exactly do you think he's living here?"
Kostin asked as he eyed the house warily.
"Because the veil to the djinn realm is in this house," Elle explained as she walked up the overgrown walkway to the front door.
Soren walked quietly beside her, his eyes moving constantly, and Sally knew her own mates were doing the same. Sally tucked her hand into Costin's as they followed the couple up the steps.
"Were you ever going to tell me there were vampires and djinns?"
Kostin shot her a grin, complete with his devastating dimple.
"Mystery is what keeps the relationship alive, Brown Eyes."
She smacked his chest.
"Not when it pertains to deadly supernatural beings."
Kostin rubbed the spot as though it had actually hurt him.
"Okay, I'll make you a deal. I will tell you about all the supernatural beings in existence if you give me a kiss for each one."
Sally's eyes narrowed.
"How do I know you won't just start making up fake beings just to get more kisses?"
Kostin chuckled.
"Guess you'll just have to trust me."
"Says the wolf to the bunny,"
Sally muttered under her breath. Her attention was pulled from her mate when the door to the mansion slowly began to open.
"Did you knock?"
Sally whispered, leaning closer to Elle. Elle shook her head.
"And cue the creepy horror music,"
Kostin said softly. The 4 of them stood, staring into the darkness of the open doorway. Sally couldn't even hear any of them breathing.
"Guess we should go in,"
Elle said as she started to take a step forward. Sally reached for the Fae's shoulder just as Soren wrapped an arm around her waist, pulling her back against him.
"Didn't your parents do the whole, don't talk to strangers, don't take candy from weirdos, and don't walk into houses that have doors that open by themselves speech?"
Sally practically squeaked out.
"What are you thinking, Elle?"
Elle didn't look away from the doorway as she answered.
"There is nothing to be afraid of. We should go inside and stay a while."
Elle answered in a monotone voice and began to march in place, being held back by Soren. What the... Sally looked from L to Costin, who only shrugged. Soren picked his mate up and turned her away from the doorway and took her face in his hands.
Come back to me, he growled.
Sally watched as his eyes lit up with the presence of his wolf. We should go inside, Al said again in a non-inflective voice.
What is wrong with her?
Costin asked, his own eyes glowing now. Sally looked again at the black doorway. She felt something brush her mind, and it wasn't Costin's presence. Her feet seemed to move of their own accord, taking another step closer to the opening. Sally had the sudden urge to go into the house. She wanted to go in because it would be safe inside. She could stay a while and rest. The words wrapped themselves around her, becoming the only thing she could hear. Come in. Stay a while. Rest. Over and over the words caressed her mind, drawing her closer and closer to the doorway. Suddenly she felt as though an icy hand was wrapped around her arm. Sally tried to jerk herself free, but whatever it was that had her in its grip was too strong. Before she knew what was happening, she was pulled through the opening into the darkness. She heard Costin's howl and Elle's gasp just before she heard the door slamming closed. And then all was quiet. Sally stood, frozen in the absolute darkness. She waited, hoping her eyes would adjust to the blackness, but they didn't. Or, perhaps, the darkness was just so absolute that no light could be reflected. Her breathing was shallow, and her heartbeat sounded unusually loud in her ears. Finally deciding that standing there like a statue wasn't going to accomplish anything, she took a deep breath before she spoke.
Hello?
For a brief moment, Sally wanted to pat herself on the back for not sounding like a quivering mouse. But the moment passed when she felt movement behind her, and she jumped, letting out a squeal.
Who's there? What do you want?
The two questions tumbled out of her mouth as she held her hands out in front of her, as though she could fend off who or whatever it was that was lurking in the darkness.
You are a human female,
a deep, silky voice said.
And yet you are more than human as well.
Seems a little unfair for you to be able to see me while I cannot see you, Sally prodded.
Despite being unable to see, her head still turned from side to side, looking for the owner of the voice.
You are young, but not so young to know that there is no such thing as fair. There will always be those who are greater and more powerful. There will always be circumstances beyond our control. Fair is nothing more than an ideal created by humans, because they cannot stand the thought of being found lacking.
Though the words were harsh, the tone of voice was matter of fact.
Okay, so what I hear you saying is that you don't have a great fondness for the human race.
It would not be wise for any race to gain my attention long enough to procure my fondness.
Not wanting to evaluate that statement too closely, Sally let out a sigh as she crossed her arms in front of her.
Could you please shed some light on the situation? I would at least like to see the face of my captor.
A deep chuckle filled the space, and then candles lit, one by one, until Sally could see that she was standing in what appeared to be a sitting room. There was a well-worn sofa along one wall, and an old coffee table sat in front of it. Two chairs rested across from each other on either side of the coffee table, and a large, round rug filled the space in front of the fireplace, which was across the room from the sofa. It was an unremarkable space, except for the floating candlesticks. What Sally didn't find was the owner of the voice.
"Why won't you show yourself?"
she asked as she turned and looked behind her, finding a doorway that led out into a hall.
"It has been a very long time since I have been face to face with anyone, let alone a gypsy healer," the voice answered.
She wasn't shocked that he, after all the voice was quite deep, knew what she was. Anyone who could make candles float and clearly was not human was sure to be able to recognize a gypsy healer on sight. In fact, humans themselves seemed to be the only ones who remained oblivious to the healer's existence.
Okay. Well, could you maybe tell me how long you're planning on dragging this out? Because I imagine right about now my mate is getting a little frantic.
She was pretty sure that a little frantic wouldn't even come close to how Kostin was feeling. And that was when she realized she couldn't feel him or hear him.
Did you do something to our bond?
Sally's fists came down on her hips as she glared at the doorway, not really knowing where else to shoot her glare. Perhaps she should have been scared, but now she was too ticked off to feel fear. She didn't like it when people screwed with her mate bond.
There has been no damage to it, he said, sounding amused. I simply require your undivided attention, and I wouldn't get that if your mate was barking in your mind.
The barking comment was enough to have her teeth grinding together.
Are you Thadric? Are you the djinn?
She snapped, uncaring of whether or not she offended him. Silence.
You are, aren't you? She asked again. Show yourself. Are you grotesquely deformed? Do you have 8 eyeballs and 3 noses? Or are you scared?
In hindsight, Sally should have known that taunting something more powerful than herself wasn't her brightest moment. She heard himself before his form filled the doorway that had only seconds ago been empty.
Oh, she breathed out. Okay, so not grotesque.
Kostin's shoulder slammed into the door for the 10th time in a matter of seconds. El didn't understand how the door was still standing after the brutal beating it had taken. Between Kostin's shoulder and Soren's foot, it should have been destroyed. She'd already tried her brand of strength, but all of her spells seemed to bounce right off of it. She had no doubt now that it was indeed Thadric inside. Djinns were powerful, and he was the most powerful of his kind.
Why did he take her?
Kostin snarled as he turned from the door, pacing across the porch like a caged beast.
I can't feel her. I can't hear her.
His hazel eyes were glowing bright with his wolf as his eyes met hers.
Will he hurt her?
El wouldn't lie.
I don't know. I don't think so, but I haven't seen Thadric for at least 1,000 years. I have no idea what we're dealing with.
Perhaps he is just curious, Soren said calmly. Out of the 4 of us, Sally is the rarest and most unique. Maybe he just wanted to get a closer look at a gypsy healer.
Kostin growled.
He has no right to get a close look at her, the male wolf bit out. She isn't a damn carnival attraction.
El glanced at her mate before looking back at Kostin. He was barely holding it together.
Soren is right, she agreed. Thadric probably just wanted to get a look at her without her protector interfering. I'm not saying it's right.
El held up her hands when Kostin shot her a snarl. But the good news is that if he is simply curious, then he doesn't mean any harm.
I'm sure she's fine. Sally's tough, and she's good with people. She'll have him eating from her hand in no time.
Soren shook his head at her.
Probably not the best thing to say, love, he murmured into her mind.
Kostin confirmed her mate's words when he slammed his hand down on the banister, splintering the wood.
He'd better not get anywhere near her hands, and Sally would never offer to feed another male.
Elle nearly rolled her eyes. She forgot sometimes just how possessive Kostin could be, because he, of all the male wolves she knew, was the most laid back. It was moments like these that she was reminded that he was still a wolf, which meant he was still prone to jealous outbursts and possessive posturing.
You're right, Kostin, she conceded after getting a glare from Soren. She would never feed another male. Even if her life depended on it, she would protect your fragile ego.
She nearly laughed when Soren thudded his forehead against the post of the stairs. Okay, so maybe that wasn't exactly what he'd wanted her to say, but too bad. She wasn't about to let Kostin act like a petulant boyfriend when Sally was with a powerful supernatural being and might need to do something that would piss Kostin off in order to stay safe, or even alive. Kostin's nostrils flared as he eyed her. After several deep breaths, he nodded.
You're right. That was stupid.
And suddenly the man was back, and he was no longer thinking irrationally.
Sally's smart.
She'll do what she needs to in order to stay alive.
Costin, I really don't think he will hurt her, Al said, and she meant it. If there was one thing she'd learned over the centuries, it was that supernaturals all seemed to possess an unhealthy curiosity. And because they were often much more powerful than the subject of their curiosity, they usually didn't feel threatened enough to attack without satisfying that curiosity.
"What do we do now?" Costin asked, still eyeing the door like he wanted to rip it apart with his teeth.
"We do the only thing we can do,"
Soren spoke up as he leaned back against the rickety-looking railing of the porch.
"We wait."
Chapter 6.
Once upon a time, isn't that how all great fairy tales start? Once upon a time, there was a blind seeing-eye dog trainer, a not-stripper from New York, a fae and a she-wolf all sitting in the pixie realm, twiddling their thumbs. No, really, we are literally sitting here twiddling our thumbs. Heather.
Stella stared at the dancing flames of the fire, as the darkness of night quickly swallowed up the daylight. Adam claimed that time didn't move any faster in the pixie realm, but to her it seemed that with each new development, the clock picked up speed. She didn't even remember how many days it had been since they'd arrived in the pixie realm. She did know that their party's number had changed quite a bit since they'd arrived. They'd started out with 7, then had briefly added a few to that number, but then they'd scattered. Sally, Costin, Soren, and Elle had gone off in search of the djinn, and Anna was still hiding away in the forest while Gustavo chased after her. Now only she, Heather, Adam, Krina, and Kara remained. She didn't really even know what they were supposed to be doing anymore. She was trying desperately to think of anything besides the growing ache in her or the reason for that ache.
"Are we still supposed to be trying to beat Vulcan at his own mind games?" Stella asked the small group. "One of our chicks is out there, hiding from the big bad wolf, while another group searches for a genie while yet another searches for Jewel, who may or may not still be alive," Heather said, her voice thick with frustration. "Frankly, it feels like Vulcan has already won the game. We're divided. Our attention, our worries, our fears are all focused in different directions. How can we possibly have anything left to try and outwit him when we can't even keep our craft together?"
"I don't think I've ever heard you sound so defeated." Perry's voice filled the stunned silence that had followed Heather's outburst. "United we stand, divided we fall. Is that what this is?"
Stella, along with the other three, had turned to face the High Fae who had appeared out of thin air.
"This is just me taking stock of the situation," Heather answered,
but her head turned in the direction of Perry's voice.
"I'm not saying we're defeated. I'm saying we're spread a little thin."
"Are you done?" Perry asked coolly. "Have you had your one freak-out moment?"
"We only get one?" Kara asked.
"Yes, you only get one," Perry snapped. "In case you haven't noticed, you aren't in Kansas anymore. This is your new life. It has perks, but it also has its definite failings. Constantly wondering if you or your friends are going to live to see next week happens to be one of those."
"I'm sorry," Stella said, raising her hand. What are the perks then, exactly?"
"I'm your new best friend," Perry held out her arms. "Ta-da! You've hit the best friend jackpot with me. Not only can I make your butt look smaller in your favorite outfit, but I can also make the things that go bump in the night shiver. I know things look bad right now, but I've got good news."
She smiled, but Stella could tell it didn't quite meet her eyes.
"And?"
Heather prompted when Perry didn't continue.
"Vulcan is going to release Jewel."
"What? Seriously? She's alive? When? Where?"
5 voices rang out at once as they all jumped to their feet. Perry held up her hand.
"Some of those questions can only be answered by you."
Stella's eyes narrowed.
"Okay, bestie, you're going to have to be a little clearer on the situation. How could we possibly know the answer to any of those questions? We didn't even know if Jewel was still alive."
"Vulcan gave me a riddle. The answer is the location of where he is going to leave Jewel in 2 days' time."
There was a brief pause before Heather spoke up.
Of all the times for you to become slow to speak, you pick now. Spit it out, woman. What's the riddle?
Perry snorted. Glad to see your fighting spirit is back. She cleared her throat and then said in a clear, strong voice, rotten to the core, framed by the sea, filled with different flavors, where many seek to be free.
Seriously? Stella let out a bark of laughter. That's the riddle? Did he come up with that all by himself?
So, I take it you know the answer, Perry responded. Stella nodded.
Rotten to the core has to be a reference to the Big Apple. Framed by the sea, I would take to mean a peninsula, which New York City is, of course. Filled with different flavors. Well, they call New York City a melting pot because of how many different varieties of people come to live there. And the whole seek-to-be-free bit, well, obviously the city was built on immigrants seeking their freedom in the United States. So, the answer is obviously New York City.
New York City, Perry repeated, mostly to herself.
The one and only, Stella agreed. Did he give you any more to go on than that?
Perry frowned. What do you mean?
Stella pinched the bridge of her nose and tried to push back a headache that she really didn't have any control over. New York City isn't necessarily the largest place as far as square miles, but Perry, there are over 8 million people in the city. That's a lot of bodies to sort through just to find our little jewel.
Well, it isn't ideal that we don't have it narrowed down to a specific street. The fact that we know the city will help a lot. We just need to get eyes in the city. Lots of little eyes.
Perry practically purred as she glanced over her shoulder, watching a group of pixies singing and working in a garden nearby. Stella's lips curled up on the ends.
You're going to infest the city with pixies?
Adam let out a groan.
Just what we need to add to our list of problems. Pixies loose in the human realm.
They won't be given free rein. Perry waved him off. It's not like this is my first pixie stakeout.
There have been other pixie stakeouts? Heather asked, then paused.
That's one of those questions that I can add to the list of things I never thought I'd ask.
Krina laughed.
That list is about to get very, very long.
Perry was pretty sure that if her kind were able to get headaches, then she would have a massive one.
Okay, that is one problem somewhat solved. I've got about a dozen others that need my attention next.
A dozen?
Adam asked with raised brows.
I'm allowed to exaggerate just a bit, considering I have a coven of dead vampires, a werewolf who has lost the true mate bond so completely that he doesn't even feel a pull toward his female, and a young gypsy healer traipsing through pixie land because she's confused about how she feels about a werewolf she's never met, while the same wolf hunts her down like a scared deer.
Throw me a bone. Adam raised his hands. Fair enough. I'll let you have this one.
How gracious of you, Perry smirked. Now, if you will excuse me, I have to hunt down a Spanish alpha wolf before he does something stupid.
What are we supposed to do? Heather asked. Perry let out a whoosh of air.
For the love of sane beings everywhere, stay put and don't go attempting to help. Pretend that helping is for losers, and you want very badly to be winners.
I'm so glad you think so highly of us, Heather smiled sweetly.
It's the least I can do, considering you have so little to work with. Now, behave.
She left them, flashing after the trail the wolf had left behind. It wasn't hard to track him, considering he was making so much bloody racket. Wolves were capable of being very silent hunters, so the fact that the wolf was tromping around like a buffalo with a burr up his butt told her just how out of control he was. Perry found Gustavo pacing in a clearing. He was wearing a pair of pants and nothing else. Muttering under his breath, he walked to the edge of the bank of the small creek, and then turned and walked several feet in the opposite direction, only to repeat the motion over and over again.
"Do you feel like a sufficient boob yet?"
Perry asked him as she crossed her arms and leaned casually against a tall tree. He turned and snarled at her. She wasn't impressed.
"She fears me," Gustavo growled. "Duh, you're acting like a possessive, furry werewolf.
Did you expect her to welcome you with open arms and make you a mixtape of all the love songs that make her think of you?
She needs my protection. She is a human living in a supernatural world full of predators. There is a reason the Great Luna places gypsy healers with dominant males.
It isn't because they're charming and full of tact, that's for sure, Perry muttered under her breath. If the sharp look he shot her was any indication, Gustavo didn't appreciate her comment. Look, she just needs time to adjust. Give her some space. Let her get used to the idea and let her come to you, she suggested, hoping the wolf would be reasonable. She would have been better off hoping Vulcan would become an advocate for world peace and feed all the hungry children of the world.
I am not going anywhere until I see her.
His unwavering glare made it very clear that Perry would not be able to reason with the Alpha. Fine, but at least wait back with the others. You're probably making all the little pixies nervous with your stamping and snarling. Dig deep and put on your big girl panties. Perry didn't give him time to answer. She grabbed his arm and flashed them back to the clearing where the group had taken up temporary residence. Thought you ladies might want some more eye candy, Perry said as they appeared in front of Krina, Heather, Stella, and Kara. Sorry, Helen, you don't even get to imagine what his hotness looks like.
That's okay, Heather waved her off. Just make him talk. I want to record his voice on my phone to add to my lady jams.
Perry frowned. Do I want to know what lady jams are?
You're not single. You don't need lady jams, Stella assured her. Kara choked down a laugh. Crap, I forgot we have a minor in the group, Heather said. I assure you, when it comes to lady jams, I'm well aware of what you're talking about, Kara assured. You're 16. You should be thinking about clothes and nail polish, not lady jams, Stella told her. Kara shrugged. Yeah, well, instead, I was trying to stay alive, unmolested and fed. Knowing about lady jams is quite innocent compared to what I've encountered in my 16 years.
And the humans responsible for that will pay dearly one day, Perry spoke up. Kara looked at the Fae, and Perry could see the question in her eyes. If you think your mate will let such atrocities go, then you don't understand male werewolves.
Even though it happened years ago? Kara asked.
It wouldn't matter if it had been 50 years ago. The ones who hurt you will not go unpunished. Your true mate is incapable of letting slights against you go, Krina added.
Why? What does it matter? Kara frowned.
Krina shook her head at the girl.
It will be hard for you to understand because of your background, Kara, but to your true mate, you are everything.
Gustavo walked over to the girl, and Perry started to step forward, but Adam held up a hand, indicating for her to wait. The Spanish Alpha knelt down so that he was at eye level with the young healer, and took her hand in his.
One day, when the bond between you opens, you will feel exactly how much you mean to the male meant for you. His day will start with you and end with you. His life's purpose will be to protect you, and see to your needs and to your happiness. You will be his sun and moon, his air and water, his light and peace. There is nothing he won't do for you.
Perry felt Lucian through their bond, felt his love, concern, and need of her, and she knew exactly what Gustavo spoke of. She had never fully understood the devotion of true mates until she'd experienced it. Though Gustavo's beautiful words were a reflection of the bond, they still didn't do justice to how powerful the connection truly was. "Will you wait here, Wolf?" Perry asked the Alpha, who was still kneeling before Kara. He bowed his head and gave a slight nod. It was good enough for her. "Great!" She flashed once again back to the clearing where she'd found Gustavo. "How is the girl?" Perry spoke into the seemingly empty forest. The foliage in front of her rustled, and out walked Adira.
"How did you know I was here, or that she was with me?" the pixie asked her.
"I'm not a high fae, simply because I unanimously voted for myself to be one, Adira. Believe it or not, I am actually quite powerful," Perry said dryly.
"Fair enough," Adira conceded. "Anna is fine. She's resting after her eventful day."
Yes, I suppose running from her mate was quite taxing, Perry agreed. How long will she be your guest?
Until she's ready to face her destiny, however long that takes.
And what if her wolf grows impatient? Adira rolled her eyes.
I'm not afraid of the big bad wolf.
I can't control him indefinitely, Pixie. You are powerful, I can sense that. But even you are no match for a pack of wolves. The healers are sacred to the pack. They may decide to join him in coming for her.
He won't continue to chase her, Adira said confidently. He doesn't want to make her more afraid. He might be stubborn, but he isn't stupid.
He's a male Canis Lupus. I'm pretty sure stupid is in his chemical makeup. Adira laughed.
Oh, I bet your mate just adores you.
Perry chuckled. He tolerates me. Her face grew serious as she met the pixie woman's eyes. She is precious to many. If I leave her in your care, you will be held responsible for every hair on her head.
She will be safe with me. Probably she is safer with me than anywhere else. No one, not even Vulcan, would think to look for her with one of my kind.
Perry nodded. True enough. Perry couldn't disagree. Adira's tribe of pixies was very powerful. Because of that, they were, in a way, outcasts from their own kind. Pixies never liked to be at a disadvantage. Perhaps it was some sort of a supernatural Napoleon complex. They always tended to side with other supernatural beings that had the most power. But when it came to their own kind, they were leery of any with an abundance of power. I will leave her with you then. Please don't make me regret this decision. Perry gave the pixie one last warning look and then flashed from her presence. Her next stop would be to check on the group who was seeking out Thadric. She probably shouldn't have let them go on their own, but she had so many irons in the fire that it was impossible for her to be all the places she needed to be.
Are you well?
Lucian's voice purred in her mind. She appeared just down the block from the house that Perry knew was to be the first stop on El's list.
I've yet to turn anyone into something unpleasant, so I suppose I'm better than expected, she told him. How is Dalton?
She almost didn't want to know the answer.
He's sparring with the other wolves.
Who's getting a beating at the moment?
All of them.
Perry coughed. He's fighting all of them at the same time?
He was slightly upset that you left without filling him in on your plan.
Lucian sounded amused. Are you going to join in?
If I get bored.
Perry tried not to worry, but despite the hard time she gave him, she loved Lucian and would be more than a little pissed if Dalton hurt him.
Please don't let him hit you in the face. I'm sort of fond of your good looks.
He chuckled.
As you wish, love. Be safe and come back to me quickly.
I've just got one more stop. Perry focused her attention on her surroundings, and though they weren't talking through their bond anymore, she could still feel his presence in her mind. She had thought that it would feel invasive to have someone so close, but to her surprise, it was a comfort. Perry walked down the sidewalk until she came to the dilapidated house that hid the veil to the Djinn realm. She turned to look at the pitiful-looking group sitting on the failing stairs. "Where, pray tell, is Sally?" she asked, noticing the healer's absence immediately, not to mention the forlorn but somehow also angry expression on Costin's face.
"He took her,"
Costin bit out as his hands clenched into fists. Perry looked at the house behind them and noticed that it seemed to pulse with energy. Thadric was working some powerful magic in order to keep El out.
"Let me get this straight," she began as she folded her arms in front of her chest. "I send you on a mission to find someone who can hopefully give us information to help our lost healer and her mate, and somehow you lose your own healer?"
"Perry, you aren't helping," El warned.
She looked away from Costin's snarling face briefly to meet the eyes of her comrade.
"It is not my job to make him feel better about his failure to protect the gift handed to him by the great Luna. It is my job to protect all of you. And when one of you fails to protect what's yours, then I fail. So far, I have 6 healers in my care, and 2 of them are now missing. Can you see how this might tick me off just a little?
She isn't your responsibility, Costin practically yelled. She's mine, my mate, my Sally, and I'm the one responsible for her.
Then do your job and protect her, Perry yelled back. She shouldn't be poking the already upset wolf, but she was pissed. Sally wasn't just any healer. She was the woman who had been willing to die for her. Perry's mind drifted back to the day in the dark forest when they'd been fighting Reyes, the deranged warlock, hell-bent on destroying his brother and anyone else who got in his way. He'd toyed with them and pitted the females against each other, ensuring that one of a pair would not survive whatever challenge they faced. Perry, along with the Romanian wolves, had been attempting to rescue the kidnapped females, but instead of accepting that rescue, Sally had been willing to sacrifice herself in place of Perry.
"Perhaps we all just need to take some deep breaths," Elle suggested.
Perry shot her a piercing glance. "Is that going to bring Sally back?"
"Perizada," Soren spoke up. "We know that you care for her. We all do. Attacking her mate and her friends is not helping the situation."
Perry knew Soren was right. She needed to pull herself together. In truth, she was a little shocked at her behavior. She was usually better at controlling her emotions. But then, there had been a lot happening in the past few days, and her nerves were more than a little frazzled. "Fine," she finally responded. "Costin, I apologize for losing my temper." Costin gave her a curt nod, but didn't say anything. "How long has Sally been gone?" she asked the group.
"About an hour and a half," Elle answered. "I don't think he will hurt her."
Perry's head tilted as she considered the house. It looked as though it would fall to the ground at any moment. More than likely, it was simply the will of Thadric that was holding the place up. It had been a very long time since she'd seen the djinn. She didn't know what he was like now. When she'd known him a millennia ago, he was quiet, contemplative, and though powerful, he didn't typically attack people just for the hell of it. His role, after all, was not of a warrior. He was a historian, a keeper of all supernatural history. If he was still the same man he'd been then she agreed with Elle, he wouldn't hurt her.
"Elle thinks he is curious because she's a gypsy healer," Costin said, his voice rough with the presence of his wolf.
"She's more than likely right. Although Thadric is the historian and knows all, he doesn't have much contact with other supernatural beings. He can see them all in his mind's eye, but that is something quite different from having one standing before you. And the healers are intriguing to many."
"What are you going to do?" Soren asked her.
Perry wished she could tell him that she'd simply blow the door down and march in and get Sally. But the truth of it was, Thadric was powerful, and that might not be the wisest move. He had to be powerful, considering all of the things he knew. He had to be able to protect the information in his care. She might be able to best him, but not without collateral damage. "I'm going to wait, just like you all have been doing. Sally is smart. She'll be fine, and at some point finally convince him to let us in."
"How can you be so sure?" Costin snapped.
"I'm not, but we don't really have a choice. Costin, you would know if she was in pain," Perry argued. Costin shook his head.
"He's doing something to block the bond. It's not gone, but we can't communicate."
"Even so, if she was in serious pain, you would know it." She could tell he wanted to argue more, but the fight seemed to seep out of him like a tire being deflated. Elle plopped back down on her spot on the stairs and let out a sigh.
"Have I ever told you how much waiting sucks?"
Perry leaned up against the rail of the stairs. "I do believe it is something that we've discussed before."
"Well, it hasn't changed from those other times. It still sucks."
"Like a cheap Perizada," Soren growled. Perry glanced at him from the corner of her eye. "I was going to say cheap vacuum." Elle snorted.
I'll believe that when you kneel before the males of the Canis Lupus and apologize for all the times you've insulted them.
Bite your tongue, Perry huffed.
That's what I thought.
Jewel had no idea how long she'd been wandering around the cold corridors of the castle since she'd ventured from her room. She'd been so sure she would be able to find her way to some sort of exit. At this point, she would even take a window, anything to allow her to see outside of the stone walls.
"He's a powerful high fey, Jewel. Did you really think you could escape from him?"
she berated herself.
"It's better than sitting around like a helpless damsel," she growled in answer. "And now I'm arguing with myself."
Jewel turned a corner and let out a loud groan as she leaned her back against the hard, cold wall and slid down until she was sitting on the floor. She was walking in circles. It took everything in her not to scream in frustration. She wasn't one to lose control of her emotions, or at least she hadn't been in the past. But since being pulled into the world of fae, werewolves, and gypsy healers, she'd faced things that she was pretty sure would cause anyone to lose control. She bit her bottom lip to stifle the tears that threatened to spill from her eyes. Jewel had a thing about crying. She didn't like it. Crying felt like giving up. She couldn't afford to give up. There was too much at stake, and she couldn't wait to be rescued. Just as she started to stand up, she fell back into the wall as Vulcan appeared before her. As she looked up at his pissed-off yet amused face, she considered kicking him in the crotch. But when he recovered, he would probably beat the living daylights out of her, and she couldn't attempt to escape if she was too damaged to walk.
"It's slightly adorable that you thought you could escape me," Vulcan purred in a voice that made it clear to Jewel that the beating she was hoping to avoid was still a possibility.
"Would you expect anything less from someone who doesn't like to feel weak?" she asked him.
"No, I suppose not. But I also expect obedience, and since that doesn't seem to be your strong suit, I will help you change that little flaw."
He grabbed her arm and flashed them from the corridor. They reappeared in a room she had not yet seen. As she turned around slowly, taking in the objects on the wall, she quickly realized it was a room she could have gone her entire life without ever entering.
"I'm sure you can deduce what many of those tools are used for. But don't worry, I have no plans to use them. I think you will require a hands-on approach when it comes to discipline."
Jewel didn't even have time to consider his words, as his fist connected with her face. Pain exploded in her cheek and her skull vibrated with the force of his blow. She staggered backward but didn't fall to the ground. Vulcan had grabbed her arm before she could tumble all the way down. He pulled her forward at the same time as his fist once again flew forward, slamming into her stomach. The air rushed from her lungs with a force that caused her chest to hurt. Jewel blinked rapidly, fighting the darkness that was threatening to take her, as she struggled to pull oxygen back into her body.
"I will do whatever it takes to get you to understand that you belong to me. The life you once knew is gone. The sooner you accept that, the less pain you will feel."
Jewel wanted to tell him that his words weren't true, because if she gave in to him, she would feel a different kind of pain. It would be a pain that a physical beating couldn't even rival, because she would be choosing evil. Jewel would be going against everything she'd ever been taught, not to mention the hurt and pain it would cause those she cared about. Even if she had been brave enough to speak, she couldn't. Her lungs were still struggling to inflate as she took in gulps of air that sounded strangled in her throat.
"Kneel before me and vow your fealty," Vulcan growled as he loomed over her.
She shook her head. One of her eyes was swelling shut, making it difficult to see him, but still she met his eyes. He slapped her. She shook her head again, though her face stung as though 1,000 bees had stung her cheek all at once. Vulcan slapped her again, and again, and again. With each shake of her head, he continued his punishment. Jewel finally fell to the ground, but she leaned to the side, deliberately making sure that she didn't appear to be kneeling before him. She could hear his rapid breathing. Had she not been the object of his abuse, she would have thought he'd just run a marathon. Jewel tried to steel herself for the blow that she knew was coming, but after several minutes of nothing, she looked up. Vulcan was staring down at her. His face was contorted into a picture of rage. She saw the minute he came to a decision. The triumph in his eyes told her she was not going to like what it was.
"If I cannot get you to obey by punishing you, then I will punish the ones you love. Perhaps I will pay your mother a visit. Do you think she would fare as well as you have if I turned my wrath on her?"
Jewel's blood ran cold as his words sunk in. He'd found her weakness. She would protect those she cared about at any cost. He'd won. Jewel shifted until she was on her knees and then bowed her head before Vulcan. Her stomach rolled in revulsion of her actions, but she didn't know what other choice she had. She would not stand by and watch others be tortured by Vulcan if there was something she could do to stop it.
"I knew you would come around," he purred.
Jewel wanted to spit in his face. She wanted to dance an Irish jig on his man parts and listen to his screams as her feet slammed into him. But all she did was kneel there, defeated, at a loss as to what she should do next.
"You give me your word that you will not harm my family or my friends," she said after a few heartbeats of coming to terms with her decision.
She looked up at him. That was a bad move because it took everything in her not to jump up and claw his face off.
"Wow," Jewel thought, "I've gotten quite violent in my time with the evil Fae."
"As long as you've given me your word that you will obey my every command."
Vulcan's eyes narrowed as his gaze bore into her.
"You have it,"
she told him, and the words tasted like poison in her mouth. They might as well have been poison because something inside of her died as she agreed to basically be his slave.
"Good. Now I need you to be a good little healer and stay in your room while I prepare things for your coming departure."
Taking her arm, he flashed them to her room.
"Sleep tight, my little dark jewel,"
Vulcan whispered against her ear. She heard him mutter a few words just before the darkness swallowed her. Chapter 7
"I've come to the conclusion that it is not healthy for a powerful djinn to be left alone to his own devices for centuries at a time. How did I come to this conclusion, you ask? It might have been something to do with the creepy stare, or the way he sniffed me, or maybe it was because he asked me question after question while simultaneously invading my personal space. He may have been very, very nice to look at, but the creepy factor was putting a major damper on the outer package. Sally."
Sally stared at the large, imposing figure that stood in the doorway of the room. He was striking and about as far from grotesque as a man could get. His white, blonde hair contrasted dramatically with the dark eyebrows, long, dark eyelashes, and dark eyes. He had a tapered nose, strong jaw, and thin lips that somehow managed to be sexy despite not being all plump and full. He was tall, and very built. Sally suddenly pinched herself, pulling herself from whatever influence he was exhibiting over her. Coston would not like her ogling another man. Not that she was ogling another man.
"Are you doing something to me?"
she asked him incredulously. He shrugged, a fluid-like motion that reminded Sally of rippling water.
"I cannot create feelings, only intensify those that already exist, even if they are minute."
Sally nearly rolled her eyes. Of course, he just had to have a voice deep and as smooth as butter. She still didn't think he held a candle to Coston, but it was disturbing just how much she was intrigued by him.
"You're Thadric?"
she asked him, deciding to ignore the whole feelings-have-to-be-there remark.
"I am," he answered as he took a step into the room. "You are a healer."
His words weren't a question.
"I am,"
she copied his own response. Sally blinked, and suddenly he was standing directly in front of her. She gasped and nearly stumbled backward. She caught herself before she tumbled to the ground. Thadric leaned in, seemingly unaware of her reaction or uncaring, and took a deep breath through his nose. He was smelling her. That pissed her off. Only one man was allowed to breathe her in. Sally placed a hand on his chest and pushed him back. She knew she couldn't have been able to make him budge if he hadn't let her. Fadrick took a single step back, looking at her as though she was a puzzle he was trying to put together.
"You need to watch where you're sticking that nose,"
she told him sternly as she crossed her arms in front of her chest.
"I have a mate. I don't cheat, and he doesn't share."
To her surprise, the djinn laughed. It was deep and rumbled in his chest.
"Your wolf is no threat to me."
"Pride cometh before fall,"
Sally told him, tilting her chin back and pursing her lips.
"Facts do not mean I have a problem with pride. I am more powerful than your mate. That is simply the truth."
His calm demeanor was annoying as all get out. Sally ground her teeth together as she tried to think of who could possibly scare the djinn enough that he would let her go.
"Fine, you aren't afraid of my mate. Maybe it's time for me to mention that I am very close friends with a high fae named Parizada, and she doesn't take crap from anyone, djinn or not."
Fadrick gave her a feral smile that had Sally taking a step back.
"Parizada," he growled. "Yes, I know of her."
"I see that her reputation precedes her."
"She is dangerous," the djinn admitted, "but not because she is more powerful than me. Parizada's shadow is trouble, and her constant meddling is like a festering wound into which she likes to pour salt."
Sally's eyes widened. "Wow, you do know her. Sounds like you two have a history. Perhaps it would be good for you to talk to her. You know, hash things out and whatnot."
"There is nothing to, as you put it, hash out. She meddled in djinn business many centuries ago. We djinn have a long memory."
Sally hated that she was curious. She was supposed to be finding a way to escape him, but instead she heard herself ask, "What did she do that was so bad?" He didn't answer. He moved so quickly that she couldn't track him. He was suddenly behind her, close enough that she could feel his breath on her hair.
"It has been a long time since a healer was involved with the supernatural world. What, pray tell, is one so innocent and young as you doing seeking out one such as me?"
He didn't give her a chance to answer.
"There are 5 little healers now, each with a male desiring to make their claim. How is it that the great Parizada has lost 2 of them so quickly?"
Sally waited a few heartbeats, and when he didn't say another word, but rather continued to circle her like a hunter stalking its prey, she finally spoke.
"You obviously know the answers to those questions, considering you know all about what's been going on. Why can't we just get to the part where you answer the question we came to ask you?"
"It has been a very long time since I have had a companion to talk to."
The look on his face made it clear that he thought his answer was explanation enough.
"It's obviously been an even longer time since you talked with a female."
His dark eyebrows drew together.
"Why do you say such a thing?"
"Because you seem to think that you will win this battle of wills."
Sally stepped around him and took a seat on one of the couches.
"You want to chit-chat for a while, or shoot the breeze for a bit? Fine, then how about a little tit-for-tat?"
Sally motioned to the chair opposite her.
"Take a seat, Thad. Do you mind if I call you Thad? I figure if we're going to be bosom buddies, nicknames are in order."
He eyed her warily as he moved toward the chair and slowly lowered his large frame into it.
"So you will talk with me a while before requesting the information you have come for?"
She gave him her biggest grin.
"Oh, definitely. I will talk." "Okay," she began as she rubbed her hands together eagerly. "You're a guy."
She paused, studied him for a minute, and then continued.
"Well, sort of. Let's go with you're a male."
Fadrick gave a slow nod.
"Then maybe you could help me out. Costin, that's my mate, he's been a little distant lately. Of course, no one else notices, but that's because the distance only happens when we're alone. As in, alone, alone?"
Sally winked at him.
"You know what I mean?"
Fadrick shook his head from side to side. She blew out a breath, ruffling her hair.
All right, let me go back to the basics. When two people love each other, they get married, and then they join their bodies as a way of showing love to each other. They do this while alone. Get me now?
Sally had to bite her lip to keep from laughing as she watched the djinn's eyes widen.